the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and I don't know if you noticed this or not, but this is an election year, okay?
Really?
Yes, it is. Believe it or not, that's what all the yelling and screaming and spatting has been about between Hillary Trump and Donald Clinton. Or is it Hillary Clinton? You lose. We just call them the clumps. How's that? The clumps are our candidates this year. All right. Mrs. Clump, otherwise known as Hillary Clinton, wants to raise even more taxes when she comes in, especially estate taxes or death taxes. And Donald Trump, Mr. Clump, wants to lower them. And what we want to do here is actually get into the details of what the proposals truly are. I mean, if we look at 2016, here we are right at the, well, we're almost to the halfway mark through October. That means you have 2.5 months left to do whatever tax planning you're going to do for the year. For many, many Americans, taxes are their biggest expense on their pie chart if they have electronic means of tracking their income and expenses, if not some of the highest for other people. So we need to talk about that today because you can reduce your taxes if you work at it.
Why don't we begin, John, with just letting our listeners know there are some real key figures if you are doing tax planning for the end of the year that's going to be very important to you, and we'll get into that. But currently, right now, we have 7 tax brackets. I'm not going to go into all of them because what I want to do is focus on the one that gets most Americans, and that's from the 25% bracket all the way down to the 39.6% bracket, and there's more taxes on top of that. And if we take a look at the 25% bracket, it begins at $37,000 if you're single, $75,000 if you're married. If we go to the 28% bracket, it begins at $91,000 if you're single, almost $152,000 if you're married. And then you get a little bit of a break before it jumps, but at $190,000, you jump into the 33% bracket as a single, $231,000 if you're married. And then once you get $415,000 of income, you're in the 39.6% bracket if you're single in $466,950. Now, this was part of the big tax break and compromise that they did in 2012. They said, look, we're going to keep the tax breaks as they were under Bush at 35% for most Americans up to $400,000. But once you get over $400,000, we're going to jack it up another 4.6%. Now, on the surface, it sounds like, well, the rich people, they can afford to pay another 5%. But it's really much higher than that. It's actually 10% higher because you got to get into the phase out of itemized deductions. You got to get into the phase out of exemptions. And then you also have to add in the Medicare and the Obamacare taxes. And when it's all said and done, the tax bracket is 44.6%. So when you look at that, from 35 to 44, you almost had a 10 full percentage point increase in terms of what the tax brackets went up. Now, there's another tax bracket if people have irrevocable trust. And where irrevocable trust might come into play is, let's say you have a living trust, one spouse passes away, the trust becomes irrevocable. Income to that trust begins at the highest tax bracket of 43.4% on interest on income of $12,400, which is why you don't want to accumulate income in an irrevocable trust because it's taxed at the highest tax bracket at a much lower level of income.
You know, the tricky thing with the tax bill, and this is what you always have to watch out with almost any of these bills that Congress has been passing. They were saying, we're only raising these tax levels back to the Clinton levels. Well, yeah, that's sort of true. But what happened along with it is that you were also losing your itemized deductions gradually over time and also your exemptions. And that's what raises you up to the net effective 45% tax level. And this happens every single time, Jim. If you ever notice, when laws are changed, they'll promise on one side, but you notice something else is being taken away on the other side.
That is exactly true, because it's the little subtleties of that. Because when everybody said, okay, they're just raising them back to where they were under Bill Clinton, everybody said, okay, that's reasonable. But here's where it kicks in. If you're single, and you have $259,400 of income as adjusted gross income. That's the number on the bottom of your front page of your tax return. Or if you are married and you have $311,300, what happens is they take 3% of that number, whatever it is, the bottom number on the front page of your tax return, they take 3% of that and deduct it from your itemized deductions. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you had $259,000. Let's take the example they give here. You had $259,400 worth of income. You take that times 3%, you would lose $7,800 of your itemized deductions. They would simply, if let's say if you had $20,000 of itemized deductions, they would subtract $7,800 from. In addition to that, you start to lose your exemptions. Everybody gets an exemption for themselves, their spouse, and their children. So that exemption is reduced by 2% for every $2,500 of income above those thresholds I mentioned of $259,400 single, $311,300 if you're married. So by the time, if you are single, you make $381,900, you get no exemptions. You lose them. And for a lot of couples at $4,500 per exemption, family of five, you know, John, that's close to 20 grand. And so that can add up rather quickly. And that's the equivalent of adding another full percentage point to your tax bracket. So if you're in a 39.6 or a 35%, add another 1%, because that's what happens when you lose those itemized deductions and those exemptions.
Yeah, but I don't want you to forget the Medicare tax, because that's tacked on top of this, Jim.
Yes. In addition to the regular loss of, you know, the regular tax rates, then there's also the phase out of exemptions. There's also something called the Medicare tax. Now, everybody pays Social Security tax if you're in the private sector. But once you reach $118,000, if you make income over that, you also pay 2.9% Medicare tax on the balance of that income. And if you exceed $200,000, if you are single, you pay an additional 0.9% Medicare tax. So you could be paying up to 3.8% in Medicare taxes if you make $200,000 and $250,000 if you're married. And by the way, those two figures, $200,000 and $250,000, are not indexed to inflation as the other tax brackets are. So when you add it all up, you know, there's a lot of additional taxes. It's not just 39.6. You could actually be in a 45% bracket.
Why don't we sum up if we can? And it's always hard to do this because if you don't have the paper right in front of you. But for all of our case study, by the way, so I should remind you when we get to the case study, we do have the information available on the site as a slide, so you can follow that. But let's take apart here and look at the tax brackets where different things kick in.
Okay, let's begin. There's three tax brackets for singles and individuals that different levels of taxation that kick in. First of all, if you're $200,000, once you make over $200,000, new health care taxes kick in. That's the Medicare tax, the additional 0.9%, plus you take the regular 2.9%, you kick in and you pay an additional 3.8% on your income. Then, if you are $259,000 and you're single, they begin to phase out your itemized deductions and your exemptions. At $415,000, if you're single, you pay higher capital gains and higher taxes on dividends. If you're married, the Medicare Obama taxes kick in at $250,000. The phase out of itemized deductions and exemptions begin at $311,000. And higher capital gains and dividend taxes kick in at $466,000. So those are three key tax brackets. Folks, you need to write these down, because in planning, you want to get yourself down below certain levels where you begin to lose many of the things you know, exemptions, itemized deductions, higher Medicare taxes, higher capital gains taxes, higher dividend taxes. All of these things are very important if you want to maintain a low tax bracket, because once that happens, it really starts to kick in and bite and catches a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, the tax I would call the surprise, surprise tax, which catches people by surprise, is the AMT, or the alternative minimum tax. And originally, this was designed to make sure that people who were able to wipe out their tax liability through various deductions still had to pay some tax. But now it's catching, because of what's happened with inflation and everything, it's catching a lot of Americans by surprise. They suddenly discover they owe another tax they didn't think they owed.
Yeah, originally the alternative minimum tax was put into place in the 80s. It was basically, it was an era when, quite honestly, John, a lot of people that knew how to do tax planning could get away with not paying taxes, because you could use tax shelters, everything. Everything was deductible. You could invest in real estate and oil and gas tax shelters, get a 3-to-1 deduction for every dollar invested. So they came in and they said, you know, this isn't right. People that are taking advantage of all these loopholes, we're going to make sure that they pay some kind of tax. And so, you know, this is the thing that cracks me up when you hear Hillary Clinton or Democrats talk about the Buffett rule of 30% tax. There is something called the AMT tax that already exists. And that tax rate, by the way, is 28%. The problem is, the way they configured it, they never indexed the brackets for inflation. So you take several decades of inflation as people's income went up with cost of living, more and more Americans are subject to this tax, and it's a gotcha tax. The average AMT tax will impact 4 million Americans, mainly middle class Americans, in 2016, and the average AMT tax will be $6,500 per individual. If you make between $100,000 and $200,000, there's a 2% chance you're going to owe AMT. If you make between $200,000 and $500,000, there's a 50% chance you will end up paying AMT. And if you make between $500,000 and $1 million, there's a 78% chance that you will pay AMT. So, John, forget the Buffett rule. There already is one. It's called AMT, the alternative minimum tax. And basically, how people find themselves getting into the AMT, if you're a middle class taxpayer, personal exemptions. If you have a large family, the more kids you have, the more personal exemptions you have, the more likely you're going to face AMT. Standard deduction, state and local income taxes, property taxes, especially in states like California, where you have high state taxes, high property taxes, those become an AMT item. Miscellaneous deductions, interest on second mortgages, all of these things kick in and they get subtracted out of your regular income tax return, and there's a different calculation, and whatever that number comes up, they assess a 28% tax. So I always crack up when they say the Buffett rule. We already have one. It's called the AMT, but instead of hitting the Warren Buffetts of the world, it hits most middle-class Americans.
All right, let's move on to the subject of estate taxes, quite often called death taxes. There is discussion about raising those as well.
Well, right now, you know, for those of us in the planning industry, there was a 5 or 6 year period we did not know what was going to happen with estate taxes, because when Obama came in, the Bush estate taxes were due to run out in the year 2010. So nobody really knew. In fact, there was one year there was no estate taxes, and George Steinbrenner was fortunate enough to pass away that year and basically passed on a $1 billion estate with no estate taxes. So there wasn't a lot of clarity. With the tax bill in 2012, they came in, they added some clarity. They started the exemption at $5 million indexed to inflation. Today, you can pass $5,450,000 and pay zero estate taxes. The estate tax rate was raised to 40%, and the annual gift limit has been frozen around $14,000. So you could give away $14,000 a year without filing a gift tax return or having any tax consequences. So those are sort of the main things that are affecting a state, but depending on who gets elected, that could change, because Hillary Clinton wants to lower the exemption and raise the estate tax rates to 65%.
So as taxes are becoming more and more onerous, there is discussion of tax reform, but be real careful of the word reform, because a lot of times when Congress critters talk about reform, they mean more of the same under a different guise. But what do you think they are likely to do anyway? I mean, right now they're discussing doing things like phasing out deductions. It sounds like they're sort of desperate is what it sounds like.
Well, they are, because they're spending too much. I mean, you know, we've just added another $10 trillion to the national debt. Now, so far, it's been okay because interest rates are low. The government's paying lower interest expense today than where they were 8 years ago with $10 trillion more in debt. But where they're looking at, and we'll discuss this with my guests, the number one area that's going to hit most middle-class Americans is if you work in the private sector, your employer gives you health care insurance. They want to start taxing health care insurance benefits because that would bring in almost $800 billion in taxes. They also want to raise the tax rates on dividends and capital gains. That would be over $600 billion in extra tax revenues. They want to limit what you and I can contribute to a pension plan or how much we could have in a pension plan. That would be another $500 trillion. And then mortgage interest deduction. Those are sort of, if you're looking at it, those are the big ones. And that's in addition to raising tax rates. So that's what they're talking about. And it depends on who you're looking at and president. We'll get into Trump's plan. We'll get into Clinton's plan here shortly. But those are really the big things that are, I would say, on the docket. Whoever assumes the White House, obviously, if it's Trump, it'll be lower taxes. And if it's Clinton, it's going to be higher taxes.
Well, I mean, all of these ideas are advanced, and that always happens every time the subject of tax reform comes up. But there must be, if we had to put this on a probability index, a low risk, middle risk, high risk probability that certain things will get passed.
You know, I would say on the low risk side would be limit or tax municipal bond interest. I think the 50 states would be in an uproar over that. Reduce retirement plan contributions, tax insurance and annuities. Get rid of the stepped up basis and cost at death. So when a person dies, there would be double taxation of the estate the way it used to be before Reagan. Lower the estate tax exemption, limit your pension plan to $3 million, and raise the tax on dividends and capital gains. Some of the moderate risk is limit deductions to 28% tax bracket. In other words, if you were in a higher bracket, you would lose your itemized deductions. The Buffett rule doesn't make a lot of sense because we already have AMT. A mortgage deduction for your primary residence, although they might limit it because a number of years ago, you used to have unlimited deductions on your mortgage. Then they limited it to $1 million and plus $100,000 on a second mortgage. There's talk Clinton wants to lower it down to $500,000 on a home. Where the high risk is the IRA stretch, which allows you basically to stretch out your IRA distributions to your heirs at a lower tax bracket, dynasty trust, and backdoor contributions to a Roth. These are high-risk items and probably something that I think both sides would vote together to get rid of.
Well, okay, let me ask a question, though. Say we move in this direction. Are there still things that you can do to do adequate tax planning? Or is at some point or another, don't even bother, just how much did you make, send it in, you know?
Well, you remember my interview with Lionel Shriver in her book, The Mandibles, the tax rates were 77%. So someday we may get to that. But right now, I mean, some of the obvious ones, tax-free municipal bonds to generate tax-free income. And I'll tell you, folks, if Hillary Clinton gets in, get your tax-free municipals now because tax rates are going up over 50%. So tax-free municipal bonds. Also, reduce taxable income to avoid those Obamacare taxes of 3.8%. Now, one of the ways you could do that is contribute to a retirement plan, a health savings account. Maximize the use of your tax deductions, such as charitable contributions, mortgage interest. You could do things like tax loss harvesting, where if you have a capital gain in a stock or mutual fund, maybe you take a loss in another stock or mutual fund, so you zeroed it out. Another thing you may want to consider, and this is going to be very important, is consider a Roth strategy. We're going to do, in our tax series, we're going to do something on Roth IRAs because they are a very potent tax planning tool for if you're getting ready for retirement to build up a tax-free income portfolio. And also what we discussed in last week's program, if you have a small business, net operating losses, just as, you know, everybody bashed Trump for doing it. But as we pointed out last week, the New York Times that reported the story, they had a net operating loss, and as well did the Clintons. So net operating losses. Another thing that you might want to think about is asset allocation. I mean, if you are in a lower tax bracket, you pay only 15% on dividends that you receive from stocks. And at a certain level of income, you pay zero tax on dividends. So that's another way. And then also irrevocable trust of distributing the income. It's amazing how a lot of trustees that take over trust when they become irrevocable as a result of the death of a spouse or one individual, they leave the income accumulate and they don't realize that that income is being taxed at almost 44% on any income that exceeds $12,400. So those are some of the obvious strategies that you might want to take a look at. Now, when it comes to estate tax planning, get ready, folks, because this is a high probability event. And the reason is Hillary Clinton wants to lower the exemption from $5.5 million down to roughly about $3 million and raise the estate tax from 40% all the way up to 65%. And one of the things that you want to do now is take a look at your estate plan and talk to your advisor or your attorney and say, hey, if, you know, Hillary gets in, how would her plan affect us? Because a lot of people put an estate plan into effect and they don't realize the laws change over time as politicians, as the makeup of Congress changes. They're always fiddling around with the tax rates. And so take a look at, you know, what kind of estate plan you have, what kind of trust, powers of attorney, healthcare directives. And another thing that you're going to be surprised when I tell you this, and please listen, depending on what state you're in, you know, we're talking about federal taxes here. Many of you live in states where there are estate taxes and inheritance taxes at the state level. And I want to get into the estates that have inheritance taxes, because in addition to the 40% tax that kicks in on estates over $5,450,000, at the state level, it is actually much worse. For example, if you live in Connecticut, anything over $2 million gets taxed at 12%. If you live in Washington, D.C., anything over $1 million gets taxed at 16%. In Delaware, in Hawaii, it's the same as the federal bracket. Anything over $5.4 million is 16%. Illinois, anything over $4 million is 16%. Massachusetts, anything over $1.6 million is taxed at 16%. If you live in Maryland, anything over $1.5 million, 16%. Maine, anything over $2 million is 12%. Minnesota, anything over $1.4 million is 16%. Wow. If you live in New Jersey, anything over $675,000 is taxed at 16%. New York, anything over $3.25 million is 16%. Oregon, anything over $1 million is 16%. Rhode Island, $1.5 million is taxed at 16%. Tennessee, anything over $5 million is taxed at 9.5%. Vermont is 16% at anything over 2.75%. And Washington State is 20%. I wonder what Bill Gates is going to do. Well, his will go into a foundation, so he won't pay any tax. But John, there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, almost 20 states in this country that have estate taxes that are pretty significant, averaging between 14 and 16%, kicking in as little as $1 million or at $2 million. So a lot of individuals sometimes are really surprised that they are subject to estate taxes when they think, I thought we were okay with the federal. You may be okay with the federal if you're under $5,450,000. But if you're at $1 million, $1.5 million, and $2 million in the states I just mentioned, you may be facing 14 to 16% estate taxes, and that could be significant. You have $2 million and your tax is 16%, that's $320,000. That's a lot of money.
Well, taxes are always under conversation. I remember a joke back with Don Amici back in the 1940s on radio about, he was asked, what was all this talk about cutting taxes? And he said, talk. You know, that was back in the 1940s. 2010, Obamacare taxes. We had those introduced. 2012, we raised the income taxes and the estate taxes and began the phase out of itemized deductions and exemptions. Now, coming up next year, we'll have a new president and a new Congress, and depending on who is elected, taxes could go up or go down.
Well, let's begin with the easiest. Let's begin with Donald Trump. Right now, we currently have 7 tax brackets, and under Trump, he would lower them to 3 brackets. There would be a 12% bracket, a 25% bracket, and a 33% bracket. The 12% bracket would be from 0 to 37,000 for singles, and 0 to roughly 75,000 if you're married. The 25% bracket would begin at 37,000 and go up to 112,000 if you were single. For the married couple, it start at 75% and go all the way up to 225,000, rounding that off. The 33% bracket would begin at 112 and it would begin at 225. And the other thing he would do is he would eliminate the alternative minimum tax, and he would eliminate the investment tax at 3.8%. And that would really help a lot of middle-class Americans that are getting hit with this AMT tax. He would eliminate estate and gift taxes. And you know, John, they really should. In terms of revenue raiser, it only brings in maybe 1 or 2% maximum a year. So it's more of a, you know, there shouldn't be rich people that pass their assets onto their heirs.
Yeah, but remember that Reagan used to talk about this too, that it put horrible burdens, not just on what you think of as being rich people, but also, you know, moms and pops, people who own farms and ranches and things like that have great difficulty dealing with this tax.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you can have a family business like a farm, and this is why Reagan got rid of double taxation at death, and believe it or not, there used to be estate taxes on the death of the first spouse, because a lot of America's family farms were lost in the 70s due to a combination of estate taxes and capital gains taxes, and so that was one of the things that Reagan did, and a lot of people have family businesses that may be worth millions of dollars but don't generate a whole lot of income. It could be real estate, it could be a farm. Or what do you do if you have a business and your children are running the business? They're in the business with you. And all of a sudden, the IRS comes in, and or under Clinton, they take 65% of your estate. When you die, how are your kids going to carry on the business? And this is something that is going to be a big debate coming forward in the media. This is the thing that bothers me about the media. They're not talking about the real issues in this campaign.
Well, all right, that was Donald Trump. What does Hillary Clinton want to do as far as taxes now?
Well, there would be 2 tax rates. It would go up to roughly 44%, and then there would be another 4% surtax to 5% surtax on incomes over $5 million. She would also lower the exemption from the current $5.5 million down to $3.5 million, and then begin taxing that at 50%, with estate tax rates going all the way up to 65%. And that's why, John, we are currently meeting with our high-end net worth clients. I met with one yesterday. Their estate is worth about $25 million. We're not going to do anything right now. We've got a couple things we're going to consider, but one of them is getting everything over $11 million into a charitable remainder trust, which would be a huge tax deduction, and phasing that in over 2 generations. In other words, the existing client's generation and then also their children. Eventually, the assets would go to charity in the grandchildren's generation. But it's one way that we're thinking of doing it, because they would be subject to a 50% tax, and that would be considerable. So, you know, we're looking at charitable remainder trust. We're looking at wealth replacement trust. And for 2 of our larger clients, we're actually looking at setting up foundations. Same thing that Trump's done and same thing that Clinton's done. I mean, the majority of Clinton's assets, over $400 million, are in the Clinton Foundation. So it's something that there's going to be a lot of tax planning, assuming, as it looks right now politically in the polls, that she will be our next president.
I would like to remind listeners, by the way, that coming up tomorrow, our guest on the program is Christopher Hennessy. He is Professor Emeritus of Law at Babson College. He's also a tax attorney and a CPA. And what we're going to do on that program is examine what the future tax landscape looks like. That's coming up tomorrow on Lifetime Income. Time now for our case study. As with all of our case studies, number one, they're based on real life case studies, which is why they're called case studies. We change the names to protect the privacy of the people involved. And also, if you happen to be close to our website, which theoretically you are if you're listening to the show, we have slides that go along with the information that we present here in the program so you can see them visually. Okay, what's the case studying this time and who are the people?
This week is the case of Ben and Cindy Tong. Ben and Cindy are both age 55. Ben plans to retire at age 65, given health questionnaire. Ben's life expectancy is age 86, Cindy age 91. Risk tolerance is fairly moderate, and same thing with investment objectives. A lot of that has to do with their age and the fact that Ben is an entrepreneur and runs his own company. He's a business owner of a small oil and gas company. He spends all his time managing the business and their three rental properties. He's concerned about taxes they are currently paying and the time it takes to handle everything efficiently. Aside from his business, Ben also holds large investments in the oil industry, a lot of oil stocks in his portfolio, and a sector that he knows very well. Cindy was a stay-at-home mom taking care of their two children, helping her spouse with the rental properties as well. Her primary concern is keeping more of the money they earn and making sure there are plans in place to protect her and the kids in case something happens to her husband. What was important to Ben and Cindy were managing assets efficiently, lowering the impact of taxes, protecting the family in case of a premature death, and then, of course, passing or creating a legacy for their two children. Their working budget while Ben was working in his business: essentials $90,000, discretionary $39,000, roughly $129,000 budget against a salary of $198,000 and rental income of $42,000, surplus of $111,000. So they weren't quite up at that level where they would lose their itemized deductions and their exemptions, but they were getting close to it, especially as if oil and gas prices were to rise again like they were prior to 2014, that would be a significant increase to Ben's business. In retirement, they estimated their budget would be $70,000, $28,000 on essentials, roughly about $98,000 a year. Their Social Security would be $42,000, so they would have a shortfall of $56,000 they would have to make up with their investments. Their assets, non-investment assets, they had their residence worth about $500,000, rental properties, three properties worth $650,000. The business was worth probably close to $2 million. Ben's retirement, $853,000. Cindy's retirement assets, $45,000. Cash in their joint account, $475,000. Total investment assets of about $1.4 million and a net worth of over $2 million. Some of the things that we had to deal with: managing taxes with multiple businesses, mitigating risk associated with the business and their investments, and also developing an estate plan to create a legacy. Now, what we did is if they head into retirement, they would have roughly about $85,000 a year, $43,000 coming in from Social Security for both of them, rental income of $42,000. What we did with Ben's retirement plan is he really didn't want to go into fixed income. And the reason he didn't want to, he said, I just don't want to tie up my money at 3% or 4% for a long period of time. And because of their tax bracket, we chose dividend-paying stocks because the dividend yield was 3.1%, which was better than most bonds with dividends going up. We did the same thing with Cindy's retirement and the same thing with their cash account because they would be in only a 15% tax bracket on dividends. If you take 15% off a 3% dividend, it was still higher than what we could get in tax-free bonds. That would create a total income in retirement of roughly $128,000, leaving them with roughly $30,000 surplus per year. Now, what we did is to minimize taxes, we restructured his company as a subchapter S-corp so that a portion of his Excess income over his salary would be not be subject to self-employment tax. That's the 15.3% Social Security tax that we paid. And we also set up a simple plan for him, IRA plan for contributions to reduce his taxable income. We also put his rentals in a limited liability corporation to protect their assets against lawsuit. And then we took a property that they held in another state, and we did a 1031 exchange into a property in their state, that way making it easier to manage the properties. The other thing that we did is we got rid of the, he had certain investments, partnerships in his IRA, which were creating K-1s. We got rid of those. We reallocated the investments to something that would lower the impact. And we also used some higher paying corporate bonds in the retirement account because they would not be subject to income tax. And we set up a term life insurance policy as a succession plan for the family business and to take care of the family should something happen to Ben prematurely. You can follow this case study on the app on your download. There's an embedded app there, so you can go right there and take a look at the case study and some of the details as I just went through them. But anyway, John, that is the end of this week's program. We are going to continue on our tax theme because, folks, you only have about 2.5 months to prepare. And assuming that Hillary Clinton could be our next president, there could be major increases coming in income taxes and estate taxes in 2017. So now's the time to really start thinking about tax planning, because if you think taxes are high now, wait till what will happen under a Clinton presidency. They would go up just like it did with her husband. So anyway, we will be doing more things about tax planning to get you prepared for what is going to more likely become more taxes coming down the road. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, I'd like to thank you for joining us here. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.